plant hardiness zones. They are a very, very useful piece of information to have, but they don't necessarily tell the whole story. Today we're going to be talking about how we can interpret what plant hardiness zone we're in and how we can use that information to give us a better idea as to which plants we might be able to grow and perhaps which of our plants that we currently give space to in our greenhouses or polytunnels might be able to go outside.
Hello and welcome to the Self-Sufficient Podcast. I'm Carl from selfsufficienthub.com and I'm here to talk about all things self-sufficiency. Being sustainable and food security matters.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome to episode 48 of the Self-Sufficient Podcast. I hope you're all safe and well. We received some feedback and a question from one of our listeners via Facebook. So if you want to contact us via Facebook, you can find us there by searching Self-Sufficient Hub. And we got a message from Mike from Denmark with a question. And the message reads like this. I have a bit of a garden going. When it comes to vegetables and such, onions are very successful and we've got two raised beds growing. I'm growing strawberries, onions, garlic and different types of herbs within them. I also have two types of greenhouses, a bigger one where I can stand up in and a smaller one that I currently use to grow flax in. In the big greenhouse, and by big it's 2 meters by 1 meter, we grow tomatoes, peppers and cucumbers, as well as mature late seedlings. I wonder, though, if you could help me out on what to look for as to what I can actually plant out of the greenhouse from those plants and grow outside. Many YouTube channels talk about zones, but I can't figure out exactly how that works for me as I live in Denmark. I think that's about the same temperate climate as you live. And that's the end of the message. So the question really is about understanding what we can take from our plants that we've allocated to take up space in our greenhouse and plant out. So there's quite a few factors to consider when we're looking at this. So I, like the Mike who posted the question, got quite a confined amount of space within my polytunnel. So it's really important that I use that space well, but also that anything that I can, that I grow outside. So we grow in our polytunnel a few cucumber plants, a few pepper plants, and some tomato plants. And as a result, that takes up pretty much all of our warm space, if you like. And it's really important that I am able to get a lot of our yields without growing in our polytunnel or greenhouse because we just don't have the space. So the question really becomes what has to be in there. And the answer, you might be surprised, is almost nothing within our climates, within the UK temperate climate. Everything that you grow in the greenhouse, pretty much you can grow outside. But just because you can grow it outside, you must be prepared to see a dramatic change in the yields. So in my thinking, I mean, I would expect to get about the same yield from one tomato plant grown in our polytunnel as maybe 6 or 8 grown outside. So you need to bear that in mind. And if you have a limitless amount of space outside, then perhaps that's how you solve that issue. But the thing with hardiness zones and understanding them is, first of all, to understand what information they are actually telling you. So when it comes to the USDA hardiness zones, which are the ones most people are familiar with, they're designed for the American area, the American geography, and they comprise of zones 0 through to 10. And each zone represents 10 degrees difference in the minimum temperature that you can expect in a winter. So it's really critical that we understand that the main piece of information that the USDA zones are telling us are about minimum winter temperatures. So there are going to be plants that, and quite often we're talking about perennials, and when we talk about perennials, we're saying these are perennials that will not survive a winter at this zone or lower. So there is a minimum temperature that these perennials will survive, and if you plant them in a zone where the minimum temperature is going to be less than that, then they will almost certainly die off over winter. But we also use them to dictate to us what annuals we can or can't plant. And when it comes to annuals, what we might be thinking about in that case, rather than the minimum winter temperature, what we're really considering is the season length. So you might have annuals such as tomatoes, which are going to die off at the very first sign of frost. And really, the key there is going to be the length of time between your last frost in the spring and your first frost in the autumn. So while the USDA zones are informative and they give you a certain amount of information, they don't necessarily give you the whole picture. We need to take into account our own climates and the distance that we have in terms of number of days between frosts. How long is our growing season? But there's more to it than that as well. It's not just a case of frosts that you need to be considering. Depending on your plant, you're also going to be dictated to by things like maximum temperatures in the summer and also daylight length. So let's get into those next. It's really easy for you to get in touch with us. You can now send us an email at selfsufficientcontact@gmail.com, or you can send us a voice message. The easiest way to do that is through the link in the show notes. You can record your message on your phone and send it straight to us, where we can play it on the show. Don't forget to leave your name and where you're calling from. We're always thrilled to hear any feedback, suggestions for the show, or questions that you may have. So do get in touch with us. So Mediterranean plants, like tomatoes and peppers, they really enjoy the warm weather of the Mediterranean. And that's why you get the increased yield from them if you can keep them in your polytunnel or greenhouse. The frost isn't going to get to them during the summer in most cases, depending on where you live. But in most temperate climates, in the UK certainly, in most of Denmark I imagine, you're not going to be getting frosts from at some point in May right through till at some point late September at the earliest. So that really is your growing season for tomatoes. And while the polytunnel and greenhouse will keep some of the frosts off of your plants towards the start and end of your season, it's only going to delay your autumn frosts by a few weeks inside your polytunnel, unless you're going to actually physically heat the space. We don't do that, and most people don't. That's not to say that you shouldn't. You absolutely should if you've got some way of doing that. But assuming that you're working on a natural heat within your polytunnel or greenhouse, really the bonus of it insofar as keeping frosts off, we're talking about extending our season by maybe a month, maybe a month and a half, by a few weeks either end that add up. But the big advantage you'll get in yields is just going to be that increased temperature that you keep during the summer when your plant's really doing its business, and it loves that heat. So that's why your yields are going to be better. So if you've got the space to plant tomatoes out, and if space within your polytunnel or greenhouse is at a premium, then absolutely get some planted out. We probably plant on average 20 plants outside of our polytunnel and maybe 6 within it on regards to tomatoes. When it comes to peppers, we tend to grow them all in the polytunnel, and the same with cucumbers. That's just because the yields to us, it doesn't really make a lot of sense to plant them out. We don't tend to get very much from them when we do that, and we can manage our space enough to have them within our greenhouse. So when you're buying seeds or trees or any new plants, unfortunately, there really isn't a one-size-fits-all system for looking at your hardiness zone and then your plants. You do need to take into account other things. Daylight hours is another one. Certain plants will only actually come to fruit if they get at least a minimum amount of daylight hours during the summer. There are other fruits that are more suited to colder climates that'll struggle if they get too much daylight hours. So these are all things that are going to be individual to different climates, and it goes beyond the USDA hardiness zones because that's dealing with purely the United States, and it doesn't necessarily translate elsewhere because, again, referring back to the start of the episode, when the USDA zones are set, they are looking really specifically at your minimum winter temperatures. So each zone is divided into a subzone A or B, and the difference in degrees is 5 degrees between each zone A, B, then the following zone A, B. And the official zone indicates the lowest or highest possible temperature during a normal year. So that's certainly a way to gain information. And in the UK, there is a different map that's been drawn that's easily found online. And I imagine that that applies for most places around the world where you can find your equivalent USDA zone, and that's going to be indicative to you for those minimum or maximum temperatures. But there are lots of issues within that scale that you need to be able to kind of adjust for on a case-by-case basis. So unfortunately, it's not a one-size-fits-all solution. It's something that you need to really understand the nuances of your climate to understand what's going to work for you. So the plant hardiness zones also don't take into account extreme weather patterns. So if you've got a particularly cold or warm, unseasonably so period, then you can expect that to have an effect on your plants that won't be accounted for by just using the colour by numbers USDA system. So keep in mind that while some species will be sold saying that they can be grown in certain climates, that doesn't necessarily mean they're going to thrive in them, particularly perennials. We've got some almond trees and we grow them with a reasonable amount of success. We're quite happy with them. They're really healthy trees and they're doing very well. You know, the tree itself is very, very happy, but it's never going to yield me a tremendous amount of almonds because our climate, while the tree is quite happy in it, it's never going to be conducive to that tree being a heavily cropping specimen for us. And we're okay with that. So just be aware of that as well when you're selecting your species of plants.
Self-Sufficient Hub is now on Patreon. You can find us at patreon.com/self-sufficient-hub. Anything you can donate is massively appreciated and will help to make the show better.
So in summary, the USDA system of hardiness zones is well adopted across the world. It's very easy to find an equivalent version for where you live, but it only takes into account the extremes of temperature in the winter without really taking into account anything else. So it doesn't take into account snow cover or summer heat or humidity where you live. I found an interesting article on thisiseco.co.uk while I was thinking about this subject, and I'm just going to read it straight from the source here, pointing out that the majority of Texas in the United States is in USDA hardiness zone 9, the exact same as we are in the south of the UK. However, anyone familiar with both climates will attest to how dissimilar they are. Similarly, Sochi in Russia, Madrid in Spain, and Belfast in Northern Ireland are also all in USDA zone 9, all with varying environments. So Whilst average winter temperature may be very similar, summer heat, duration, humidity, snow cover, and even day length are completely different. And all of these factors and more need to be taken into account for a plant to thrive in a specific area. So I wish it was a simple case of, okay, these are the plants that you can plant if you are in this zone. But it's not as simple as that. And it is a case really of researching your area and what works in your climate. And that's pretty much how I interpret the USDA zones. You know, I do use them, I do refer to them, they are helpful as a starting point, but that's all I consider them to be, really, a starting point, and then I take everything else into account. But the key thing for me is, if you're growing something in your greenhouse and you want to free up some space, then by all means have a go at planting it out. And so long as you're avoiding the frosts, in most cases, that's going to work for you just fine. You will probably see a significant reduction in yield, but in terms of whether or not the plant can survive or not, then, as I say, in most cases, you're going to see that your plant can get on, can survive, it just might not thrive. So that wraps up that part of the podcast. I'm going to end today with a piece of feedback I received on our Facebook page, and it's a recommendation by Mike Koopman, and he writes, "Lovely podcast that is relaxing to listen to during your work time commute, watering your plants, or basically anything you do. Full of valuable tips from gardening to animal husbandry and foraging. Calm, soothing voice and great ideas come through your speakers / earbuds that made me think a lot about my plans for my future homestead. I really recommend it, and you can easily ask questions or bring up topics you want to hear more about." Thank you so much, Mike, for your lovely comment, your kind words. I really do appreciate them. And if you want to recommend us on Facebook, then we would be delighted for you to do so. We are also thrilled if you can leave us a rating and a review wherever you get your podcasts, of course. And also make sure that you are subscribed. It's absolutely free, and it makes sure that our podcast turns up in your podcast feed without you having to think about it. So make sure you are subscribed to our channel. If you've got any questions, please do get in touch. You can email us at selfsufficientcontact@gmail.com. You can leave us a voice message via the link in the show notes. You can contact us on Facebook. However you get in touch with us, we're always thrilled to hear from you. And whether it's a question, a comment, if there's something you think I've got wrong, we're always, always, always grateful to hear from you. The final thing is, if you'd like to be on the podcast as a guest, if you've got a specific area of knowledge that you'd like to share, then again, reach out and let's see if we can't organise something. We'd love to have a few of you on as guests. I know that I've got a few listeners who are highly skilled in certain aspects, and it would be my pleasure to have you come on and share what you know. So, as always, thanks for listening, and I will speak to you on Friday. Bye-bye.
If you find these podcasts valuable, there are several ways you can support them. The easiest ways are to rate it and leave a review wherever you get your podcasts. You could also share it online, talk about it anywhere you blog, or find someone you think might be interested and point them our way. You can also find and support us on YouTube, where we are also Self-Sufficient Hub. Thanks for listening.